come in and sit with us. We're four friends, talking, thinking, and laughing. We take on the absurd and the profound, sometimes both at once.
And we speak about aging because, oh, yes, we're living it, feeling it in our bones. First time for all of us.
And we don't plan to go quiet. We prod, we tease, we wander down strange roads. A story here, an argument there, a joke, maybe a truth.
Dylan Thomas said it best, "Do not go gentle into that good night." We won't. We'll burn, we'll rage, we'll keep moving. We'll take care of each other as we go.
Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick.
Welcome to episode 2 of Seniors in the Building. My name is Signe, and I'll be your facilitator today. Our topic is travel. We have all, the four of us, traveled to many places in our lives. And as we've been talking about that, we discovered that there were many things that we learned and many things that changed us in those experiences. What we want to talk about today is what those experiences were, how they did impact us, and what do we take forward into our future selves as elders from those experiences. I have traveled, first of all, when I married Jack, I moved from the U.S. to Canada, and that was my very first experience of living in another country. And believe it or not, it was very different from living in the U.S. The one thing that I can say I noticed was I got world news in Canada. I did not get world news in America. In our life together, we have traveled and lived in Germany and India, and we have, of course, done vacations in many exotic places. But that is basically where I've been. Jack?
Yeah, the strange thing about Germany, where we lived for a year, was that I don't remember learning much about the culture per se. I was totally, as Signe was as well, but maybe less so, fixated on learning German. And it was the first time I had been immersed in a culture with a different language. And that was harder than I would have thought, even though we had taken preparatory German classes prior. It was difficult. And also, I was so fixated on my thesis, which I was sent there to do some research for by the McMaster University. So I remember the pastry, and it was wonderful, and the friendships we made, which are complicated by virtue of our speaking like children for most of the time. Yeah.
Elaine.
Well, I haven't lived in another country. I've moved a fair bit across Canada, but I have had many opportunities to travel overseas to a few places as a result of my job. And Rick and I, of course, have taken some vacations as well. A couple of places come to mind. I made three trips to Cameroon to work with the Lutheran Church there. And I think one of the main things I experienced there was how the vulnerable were trying to find their voice in the midst of a very patriarchal society. And so that was a little bit difficult for me as a North American. But I had to come to realize that we can't make those changes for them, that the women had needed a voice and to have someone stand with them and advocate, but that it was their voice and in their culture that had to sort of lead the way in that experience. I think the other thing was going to Sweden to an LWF Women Bishops gathering, and we were sitting in this room, and I went right to the back thinking, well, I've only been a bishop for 6 months, so I'm going to kind of stay out of the way. And the first thing one of the women from South America said was, "Now, all of you North Americans, you just can't sit back and not say anything. We need to have your guidance here. We need to have your voice here. We need to have your encouragement here, and we need you to stand with us. And so tell us about your experiences, and then help us to make those experiences relevant in our own community. So those were two things, and then, in terms of my work. And then thirdly was a trip to Normandy in 2019 with our grandchildren, and the experience of walking with them through the Canadian cemeteries and hearing them yell out the ages of all of the soldiers who died, and you know, how much war is about what young people sacrifice, and how much what war does to a whole generation of people. So that was one of my learning moments. Rick.
Yeah, I guess I'd share that the travel has been, I think, fairly extensive, especially when compared to many people. One of the things I gain from all of that is sort of how you can always learn something new, different, and exciting. I know I was able to go to Cameroon a couple of times with you, and what we learned there about the culture, about the people, about their way of viewing life, and about their dedication, I think, also to build connections with us and to build positive relationships. They just didn't want some kind of a distant relationship. They really wanted to connect with us. I think what I've learned from all the travels, and hopefully continue, is the idea of being adaptable, being flexible. I have a couple of stories I can share down the road, or even a little later this morning or this time, where I've learned some very specific things. I guess one I remember is when we were still very young parents, we were going on vacation, and we do road trips then. And leaving Saskatchewan, where I was serving as a Lutheran pastor, heading out to British Columbia, where my mother lived, and our youngest was extremely restless. And actually was suffering some kind of, I don't know, travel pains. Whenever we stopped the vehicle, they would start to cry. And then the first night we stopped in a campground, and as long as we pushed him around in a stroller, he was content. But then as soon as we laid him down in the bed, even when he fell asleep, he would wake up and start to wail and cry. So this went on until about 1 a.m, when Elaine determined, that's it, we've had enough, we're keeping everyone awake. So we packed everything up under the headlights of the car and drove through the night, which sounds like a horrendous ordeal, but we traded off driving and took little naps. And out of that developed a pattern of travel vacations that we took for a number of years with our children. We packed them up and put them in their pajamas and lay them down in this back of this little station wagon we had and drive through the night, which meant for more peaceful driving. And then we'd take turns. And it was a lesson in adaptability, because we had a lot of positive experiences and we had a lot of good vacations out of that, a lot of good memories. So things did not begin the way we wanted to, but in the end, it created some memorable experiences to this day.
It's called creative parenting.
Yeah. Either that or go crazy.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about this reframing, right? Your experiences that you kind of adapt your lives, right? From one experience that you've learned as you travel, and you kind of adapt it, how is that going to fit into your life every day? And I think that's really important for us as we age, right? Because we are still growing, and we still have vitality, and we're still going to have to adapt in order for us to experience that growth and that vitality, right?
That's right. I can remember the first day in Germany when we got off the plane, we got to our place that we were staying, we set tasks for each of us for the next day. Our daughter was 15 months old, and Jax was to figure out how to take the train from where we were in this little town to Tübingen, where he was supposed to be in classes, and my job was to figure out how to find diapers and food yes. for supper, well, to eat. And And we'd had, like Jack had said, we'd done some university courses in German, but to be anyone who's done this knows, to be immersed in a language that you are not familiar with and nobody speaks your language, at least in this little Catholic town we were in, nobody spoke much English, it was daunting. But we managed, we got through the day. He became very expert in High German and being able to read things, and I became very expert in the language and negotiating things, the local dialect, and we managed. And again, it is that adaptability and flexibility and willingness to take take the risk to even go in the first place, with a 15-month-old, and we made very good friends who also had children, who eventually helped us more. But that was my first day of feeling that and beginning to start to understand what it must be like for someone to come to our country and have to be immersed in a language that they don't know, and being very articulate and comfortable in their own language and expressive, and then not having that ability to communicate what you need to communicate. And it's made me much more sensitive to someone who is struggling, yes, in our country, in our language.
Yeah.
What I remember about Germany was that, and the memories are fading with time, as is everything else, is that the Germans that we met, that is friends and, friends and relatives of Andreas or Angelica and Thomas, were so welcoming of us and partied with us. And it was during the time that the World Cup was in Mexico. And so we were watching TV, and every morning, Frühstück in Mexico, breakfast in Mexico was taking place. Anyway, I learned that the extent to which we are passionate about hockey here in Canada, they are even more so about Fußball in Germany and throughout Europe.
Well, I was, in terms of what you were saying about having to adapt, right? I think there's a stereotype out there that seniors can't adapt, right? That they're set in their ways, they've got their lives organized a certain way, and I wonder if, for me anyway, I can't see that set in my ways yet. I'm just busy trying to adapt, and I think the pandemic was part of that, right? How could I adapt my work life? How could I adapt my home life, knowing that there were times in which we couldn't even leave our building, and other times in which we were in a bubble and we would have to figure out how to get to the grocery store during seniors' times or whatever that they had set up. I mean, there were all kinds of things that we had to adapt. You know, we had to adapt and change our ways and change our thinking about the world. And I think that's one thing that sometimes is a difficult thing to learn as a senior, right? Because we've been practicing one way of living for so long, and now we're not in that place.
But I think that's a significant life lesson, right? Because change happens, and many of us become very resistant to that and resistant to learning. I'm hoping that my experiences through travel and through those kinds of events have taught me that, no, there has to be adaptability. There has to be ways to navigate in a comfortable way, or at least in a way that is not overly stressful. Because it's going to happen, and what do we do about it? I mean, we can just fight and resist and rebel and become miserable people, or perhaps we can be open to what's new and what's out there. So, And maybe if I can indulge here, one of my learning experiences took place after 38 years of marriage. We were on a cycling trip in Germany down the Elbe River, and the rental bikes we had these panniers on the back. And I took both of them onto my bike just for balance sake, and that Elaine was the one who put them on there. And at one stop on the first day, we were searching for something, and Elaine needed something, and I said, I was looking at a pannier. She says, no, it's the other one, that's yours. And I said, well, how can you tell the difference? Because she said, well, yours is on the left because you're left-handed, and mine is on the right because I'm right-handed. And I went, oh, that makes sense. And then Elaine said, just like I organize the towels in the bathroom. And I went, you do? I mean, it was just like... So finally, after 38 years, I knew which towel was mine in the bathroom. It's like, wow. And it's kind of embarrassing, but really funny that it took me that long to catch on. So you can always learn something new. Very memorable.
That fits into a whole different dynamic, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. How much we've changed after so many years of marriage, right?
That's
What does that do? Or even when you travel, right? I think about, because I had to do a lot of international travel, the first time after I had been in my position for a couple of years, Rick came along, and I was very organized coming into the airport. I knew exactly where I was going for the security check. Every airport I'd checked on a map, you know, and knew exactly where I was going, and he was just wandering around looking at everything. And I was like, come on, get together here. Or, you know, make sure you got your passport. Have you got your whatever, you know? And it was just, I thought to myself, wow, when we traveled in a car, it was different than when we were traveling through airports as we got older, right? And
yes,
we're able to do different kind of travel, right? Again, we had to adapt in our relationship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Jack. Yeah, I'm a little bit reticent to talk about India, where we lived for 11 months, only because I have so much to say, and I could go on for hours.
There you go.
Talking about resilience, this was, how many years ago was that?
Let's see, the kids were 12 and 7, so 95, 96.
Okay, so 9 years ago.
29 years ago.
29 years ago. Okay, there's a senior moment.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, I was thinking prior to doing the broadcast this morning that probably the major learning for me in India for those 9 months was the wonderful receptivity we had in terms of friendships and guiding us and to a significant degree taking sympathy on us, because the adjustments were profound at every level, from washrooms or lack thereof in terms of squat toilets to, for me as a scholar of religions, being immersed in a non-Western, non-theistic culture. I need to be careful with theistic, because there is, of course, within Hinduism, which I was there to study, there are many gods and goddesses to the nth degree. There's almost no counting of them all. And what it did for me was relativize my Christian convictions. By relativizing them, I mean it put into a broader perspective the Christian tradition being simply one religious tradition amongst many. Now, I'd known that, of course, theoretically, but experientially, it was a shock, because I was always asking myself, how can these people revere a elephant-headed god, for example, or a monkey god? And it made me realize that the convictions that I held, maybe not so dearly, I learned, are in fact convictions that are relative to our culture, and not universally shared. So that was a shock. And as well as the practical issues of traveling from A to B, often requiring an auto rickshaw. And also, yeah, there's so many things I learned. The social divisions between the haves and the have-nots, the poverty around us. And now I am speaking about in India 20-some years ago, and I don't think it's... I think it has changed significantly.
Sorry, Jack. One of the thoughts I have when you mention India is often here we have certain stereotypes, whether it's about India or other nations. And for example, in India, somehow we think that everybody there speaks like one language and there's perhaps one or two ethnic or religious groups, but are one dominant ones, when in fact you share that there's a multiplicity of them.
Yeah, the one thing I heard and have read about subsequently is that India as a country is really somewhat of a British fiction. That is, the states, many of the states have their own revered languages, and especially in South India are resentful of Hindi being imposed upon them from Delhi in terms of a national language, when in fact there's Tamil and Malayalam in Kerala, et cetera, et cetera. So actually, rather than being a British fiction, it's somewhat of a miracle that the country holds together, and especially when it comes to religious divisions, especially between Christian and Muslim and Hindu. That's about it.
I think the whole experience of India became, in terms of our family, if I can bring it down to that point, was a gift. It was a gift in that our children began to see us as parents a little bit differently, began to see us as people who they did not have to push against. Because Indian children revere, for the most part, and respect their parents. And, I mean, the whole arranged marriage thing, they trust their parents to make good decisions for them. And so when our daughter was 12 and 13 and our son was 7 by the time we left, and that carried us for many years, that sense of parents can be relied on and trusted and can be an ally. They don't have to be somebody that you push against for your independence. And that was a gift that was given to us. And it's something that I try to think about in terms of when I'm with my family or when I'm with others, also working toward that kind of paradigm as opposed to the one that... Can happen where children are pushing against their parents and fighting for their independence. So,
I found also as in my parenting that my kids could see that I was much more open and less parochial, right? And that I could see that there were many options out there and many opportunities. And I hope that when we were traveling with our children, we could teach them that too. I mean, one of the main goals we had when our first child was born, that we would see that our children were able to see every part of Canada, every area or every province or whatever. And we failed at that in terms of not getting to Nunavut or Newfoundland. But I still recall going to Quebec and having them speak French, asking for their food at the table in a restaurant, or walking through the grocery store and choosing products, looking for, seeming to understand and to translate in their head what product it was on the box label or whatever. And so I think we were teaching them that the world that they were born into isn't the whole world, right? That there are other experiences and other opportunities and other places that are quite different. And taking them on that journey with us, I hope that that's what we've given as a gift to them, is to be less parochial and more open to the differences that are in the world.
I agree. I think that both our experiences of living in Germany and living in India made us more open as parents and more more accepting of behaviors and more accepting of all kinds of things, and made us more approachable as someone who they actually could trust and not have to fight against, that we would listen.
Yeah, one of the thoughts that crossed my mind was in a couple of travels, learning the diversity of how people are, and yet also the commonality, and how you know, travel or encounters can really erase stereotypes and broaden your own understanding. Specifically, I was thinking when we were in Cameroon, we were in the northwest part, gathering with a worshiping community there that was Fulani, and I believe Fuldi was the language they spoke, which was some sort of an offshoot of Arabic, I think, if I'm correct. And the word they would use when worshiping was Allah. We also found that out when we were in Israel and Palestine, joining with some Arabic Christians. And of course, again, there the word they used for God was Allah. And we here stereotypically think, oh, this is just a reference. This is the only way Muslims use that term, right? And you stereotype people that way, when in fact, it is a linguistic term that is used by people of different faiths and cultures and backgrounds. And for us to sort of get out of those little narrow blinkered stereotypes and look at things in a broader sense.
And I think that for me, that's what travel actually did. It broadened me, broadened my horizons. Mm-hmm. From the very beginning, from my first move from the US to Canada, and to all of the travel that we were fortunate enough to be able to do as we journeyed together in our married life. And it really does change you. It does change you.
Mm-hmm.
It has made me definitely, now that I've made Canada my home, it makes me really appreciate the culture here. And, I mean, that saying of... you know, a fish doesn't know what it's missing until it's out of water. It's the yes. same when you don't know what you're missing until you're out of your country. And when you come back, that appreciation, I think, is profound.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I struggled with in India, and still do, we made good friends, Luther Paul Naka and his wife Jansi and their kids, took us into a world of injustice and persecution for the Dalit people of India, because they were Dalits, meaning outcasts, and how deeply entrenched it was in the culture, such that it's still today, I believe, and please don't take offense if you are of Indian background, still exists from what I've been reading. And it is... It's different than racism in America in the sense that, different but similar, in the sense that it is something that you cannot move away from no matter the education. It is part of your very being from birth. And so the whole issue of caste discrimination became a forefronted issue for me. But also traveling with Luther Paul throughout many regions of India and the education he offered, it was just life-giving in terms of learning about India and the multiplicity of languages and cultures therein. And he was just phenomenally open to the diversity that was his country. And even though he was a Christian pastor, he had a deep understanding of Hinduism, but not in a negative way. He appreciated it immensely. So in terms of learning and also adjusting to so many different things, they were a life-giving, they were life-giving for us, that couple, and also his children, who were quite young at the time, but now they're adults.
Yeah, I was thinking what both of you have said there, and reflect on that, that what that means to me is that we can still hold to our, say, values or our value of Canada, say, or perhaps our traditions and even our cultural and religious backgrounds without necessarily looking down on or thinking that we are superior in mm-hmm. some way, but to recognize the commonness of humanity and within our differences, to be able to see the common connections. I mean, that's one thing I really appreciate. And it seems like now when I do travel, I kind of look for that. I kind of look for that. Where's the commonality? Where are we? What do we have in common, rather than how they are different and how can I establish sort of my superiority based on, I don't know, the country I come from or the language I speak or the religion I hold?
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I know when you say that, what's about commonality, I think about people who are now I can remember the people that were aging that we went to visit in Germany that one year, and I wondered about at the time we were pretty young, I think we were in our 20s, and I remember how they functioned in the home. You know, we were laughing a little bit earlier about how when one person gets fixated on a certain task and the other has to say, just let it go, like, just let it go, it's fine, you know. And we watched that experience, and I used to think, oh, well, we're not going to be like that, right? And it's not true, right? We're exactly that. I mean, we are, it doesn't matter what people we are, we are going to age.
Yeah, but we don't have sauerkraut for breakfast. So.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, that speaks to our differences by country in terms of aging, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
I remember when we lived in Germany being so impressed how all the older people that were living around us would get out and walk every day to get their food, and they'd get out
yes.
and do stuff every day. They mm-hmm. would be out there in the garden. They'd be just very vital and very active. Mm-hmm. And it was a different model than what I had. I mean, there are still homes for older people and that kind of thing, but they go in later, much mm-hmm. later than we do in this country. As opposed to India, where aging is a little harder. India is a country where it's very hard to get around if you're older, because there are so many hazards mm-hmm. and so many ways to be hurt, physically, actually. And there aren't... A family is the most traditional way of caring for older people. And if you're a widow, you're often sort of shunted aside. And we saw that many times too. So I think in my travels, if I think about moving forward with what I've learned into the future, there have been a lot of different models that I've experienced. That and I think that as we choose to be elders, that shapes how we think of ourselves as growing older.
A primary issue of learning for me was the depth and breadth of white privilege that we experienced in India, almost embarrassingly so. Not almost, always embarrassingly so, inasmuch as there's tended to be a reverencing of white skin. And you see that in whitening cream being sold in the pharmacies for women in particular to lighten their skin, but also just reverencing, worshiping of Western culture. And again, please don't take offense at that, but it was the case that, and maybe is so, that it taught me to appreciate that I am encased in a privileged skin and language, English, for example, that is people around the world are struggling to get on board with in order to be part of an advanced, and I put that in brackets because it is in so many ways not advanced culture that is North America and Europe, well, North America in particular. So that was humbling and eye-opening, the whole issue of white privilege. And it makes me appreciate, too, the Black Lives Matter movement here and how it is that people without white skin do struggle to feel a part of and to participate wholeheartedly in what is still, to some degree, especially now given what's happening in the United States with the election of Donald Trump, a culture that is animated by white privilege.
And I guess, how do we engage in that here using these experiences of travel and broaden? How can we then apply that learning so we can, say, be advocates here, so we can be people who speak up against those kinds of hierarchies, those kinds of prejudices and harmful practices? I think that's a real critical learning piece that, again, I mentioned this the last time, often when you get older, you can kind of feel like you just want to withdraw and just let the world go away. But instead, I think there's a real, I would say, impetus for us to get engaged and to share that there's a real issues there, and there's commonality that we have, and that we need to, I guess, fight against that injustice wherever we are able.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It brings us back to, I think, what we were saying the last time, that we, as we find our purpose and that advocacy role and that role of being someone with a voice who speaks out, is really important. It's important to us. I think it's important to the four of us around this table, mm-hmm. for sure. Yeah. For sure. And that's still something to be, I think, discussed and explored. Any other thoughts before we wrap it up?
I'm good.
I'm good too.
Yeah, I'm done.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope it's been a place where wisdom meets laughter and that listeners have felt a part of the conversation. So until next time, this is Seniors in the Building.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, RSS Feed Community, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is foursseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral four, followed by seniors in the building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, stay curious and hopeful.